This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is sharing the message that connection is crucial because good relationships are an essential and sometimes overlooked component of mental well-being. If your relationships could use some strengthening, a licensed therapist from Talkspace can help. Therapy can help you communicate better with loved ones, repair conflicts, and understand how to address loneliness and build community. It's easy to sign up. Just go to Talkspace.com and you'll be paired with a therapist within 2 days. You'll meet with your therapist online on your schedule. Plus, Talkspace is in network with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. Make personal connections a priority and start today. If you're not covered by insurance, get $80 off your first month with Talkspace when you go to Talkspace.com and enter promo code SPACE80. That's SPACE80. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com and enter promo code SPACE80.
Texting 713-780-3776.
Most interactive sports talk show in Houston, 713-780-3776 to call in or to text in. I do want to know what you want to happen this weekend. Of course, none of us want to see Hector Neris suspended. I'm not going to act like I know what was said. I also am not going to act like baseball will know what was said either. I think there's some he said going on. I think a fine is likely. I don't know if they can go so far as to suspend him, though, because I imagine the Players Association will step in if these guys aren't going on record with what he actually said.
Remember the Myles Garrett, Mason Rudolph? Remember the head bonk, the helmet bonk on Mason Rudolph's head, and that there is no audio of what was said that play. For whatever reason, the mics just stopped working that play, and we never knew what was actually said. I don't know what MLB – I mean, maybe you could make the argument that the NFL is just trying to protect – you know, either Rudolph or Garrett in that situation. And so they just kind of buried it, like the NFL buries everything. Do you think that the MLB will do the same thing where they're like, listen, no one's going to come out looking good if we, whatever is actually said, let's just, bury it? Or
they will bury it. They like to bury things. As we remember with the Astros sign stealing scandal, there was no follow-up on any other teams after that was done. They wanted to move on. I honestly think there might have been a directive behind the scenes to avoid talking about this, if possible. Because everyone went radio silent. And it was still, I think, an interesting story. And the beat reporters who covered the team every single day, I'm sure that they still had some questions if it was happening with other teams. And it supposedly was happening with other teams.
Yeah.
So I think in this situation, yeah, they're going to try to bury it. And I bet the best way to do it is a fine. And
especially with it being like 3 games until the playoffs, too.
Yeah.
So they can't really like suspend these guys for 5 games.
Well,
or they can't suspend Neris.
They can. And again,
did nothing to get suspended.
Let's also remember the Astros were the one team punished for all this. Was their punishment that heavy? It really wasn't. But there's also a dynamic of, sure, maybe the Players Association stands up for Hector Neris, but what do the other teams around baseball want to see happen because they all hate the Astros? Like there's definitely an element of that to wonder about. And look, I mean, these could be Hector Neris's final games with the Houston Astros. He's a free agent at the end of the year. He's going to be rather expensive in the offseason. It's a shame that they gave money to, I don't know, Rafael Montero, so they would actually be able to afford him, because it's not just that Neris is a good pitcher. It's also that you like the little emotional charge that he gives you. Relievers are very difficult to predict year to year, though, so there is that, I guess, you could use as a devil's advocate argument. But, I mean, there is a chance that we end up seeing Hector Neris get suspended. I don't know how high it is, and again, I don't know if baseball is going to be willing to really fight the MLB Players Association. And I imagine Neris would have the ability to perhaps appeal the suspension and make it so it doesn't happen until next year.
Yeah,
because of the plausible liability. Right, like Sean, unless there's some sort of body mic on one of these players, I don't think we can really prove what was said unless Julio Rodriguez or Eugenio Suarez go on record and say exactly what was said. And it seems like they're reluctant to do that, which is actually working in Neris's favor.
Yes. Also, it could be the situation like with Yuli Gurriel, where by the time the punishment comes down, now Yuli was different because it was in the freaking World Series. But when Yuli did the gesture towards, or not towards, but about Yu Darvish in the dugout, he got suspended, what, 5 or 10 games?
Yes.
But the start of the 2018 season, maybe it's something. I mean, I can't imagine that Hector Neris, maybe I'll be wrong on this. Like, I can't imagine he gets suspended, like, more than 1, 2, 3 games.
I bet most of it'll be 5 because he's a pitcher. That's what they generally do. Even it's weird because, like, starters versus relievers.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going to happen. All I know is that baseball is looking into this and that there's definitely potential for danger with Neris, but I don't think it's going to affect the Astros this year. As far as what actually happened, there are so many things, intricacies that I can't really understand because I don't speak Spanish. I'm not from a Latin American country. When I was in college, I had a lot of Puerto Rican friends. I used to hear that P word a lot, but they were calling people bitches. They weren't calling people homophobic slurs.
Yeah.
But that word can be interpreted as a homophobic slur. So that's because it supposedly means male prostitute. Like, there's a lot of tricky things with this language. And on the other side of things, I get why Seattle's freaking out. It is a very, very gay-friendly city. So I'm in the middle here with an understanding of both cities.
Literally wearing a split shirt.
And I get why they're all freaking out at each other. I do. I'll be honest, I'm tired of it, but it is a big story right now, especially with the Astros having an off night last night.
And part of it, like, you make a good point about the LGBT community in Seattle and why this would be especially under the magnifying glass there. Another reason it's under the magnifying glass is that Seattle hates it when Houston does anything. They get in their feelings so quickly when it comes to the Astros, especially, you know, in this scenario where it's not only an Astro after winning 2 or 3 in a very important series against the Mariners, but it's also going after Julio Rodriguez. I think that's part of it, is that it's Julio Rodriguez. And yeah, that's their guy. That's like the, like we've talked about it a couple times during the year where, you know, Altuve does hits for the cycle and the lead baseball story on ESPN isn't Altuve, it's that Julio Rodriguez is like, I don't know, smiled after hitting a home run or whatever the lead story is. You know, it is something where you're going against, like, the not just the face of that team, but someone who's trying to get propped up as the face of baseball.
Face of baseball, exactly. That's a fair point. He is Sean Mapes. I am Paul Gallant. It is the Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Scenarios for the Astros this weekend. I'm curious as to if you are rooting for the Astros to just get a playoff spot by any means necessary. There's an argument to be made that the Astros, if they were to, I'm having a brain fart here. There's an argument to be made that if the Astros end up going on the road, it's better for them. And if things continue the way that they're going, with Baltimore winning the American League East last night, there's a chance that Tampa Bay is just going to rest everybody, which makes it more likely that Toronto is going to lock up the number 5 overall seed. And that would mean that in the six, your first round matchup is a pretty favorable one. It's Minnesota. And then after that, it's probably Texas, who you've done very well against. We've got Dr. Dre on 290 calling in, 713-780-3776, with a thought on Hector Neris. What's going on, Dr. Dre?
Hey, Paul, Sean, how's it going?
Yo.
Hey, just wanted to make it short and sweet. I just think it's a little bit hypocritical of batters getting all sensitive because the pitcher shows them up, man. I mean, see all the bat flips, you see the celebration, you see the dancing as the batter's coming into home plate after hitting a home run. Big deal. He pointed at him and yelled at him. I think it's a non-issue, man. And batters can't be as sensitive as much crap as the pitcher says.
That's a great point. It is funny, Dr. Dre. I can't remember a single time I've seen a pitcher do that after striking a guy out. Like, not one. And I brought that up. Dustin, his sources on Twitter, said, like, don't we see players getting in the face of other players and chirp all the time in football after a good tackle or catch? Yeah, 100%.
Basketball. Yeah.
But it does feel like hitters get to do it, and pitchers, their only retaliation is by throwing at them, and then we dump on the pitchers for throwing at them. This actually is a healthy response, in my opinion. The problem is the word that was said, that's thrown everything into territory on the internet. If you get what I'm saying, that's why all of Houston is yelling at Seattle people. It's a majority Hispanic city. It's like, what, 44% Hispanic versus a city where it's almost 13% LGBTQ. So it's like two sides that feel very passionate about something they know better than the other side and sensitive to it. And it's just led to the absolute worst combination on the internet. And I know for a lot of people in Houston, you're not dealing with this. I am. Like, this is my entire internet feed is just everyone yelling that Hector Neris needs to be taken out, back, and shot, or that Hector Neris is a hero. And I'm like, can't we just be nuanced and in the middle? You know?
No.
Like me with my stupid Mara Rose shirt.
Yeah, I like Mr. Can't we all just be in the middle? Well, you literally have a shirt split down the middle. Yeah. I do think that it is a good point. And especially, it's what I think Hector Neris was like kind of referring to in his statement that he put out, where there is a little bit of, you know, kind of one-upsmanship, or, you know, you celebrate a little bit extra when it's when Julio hit the home run last year against Hector Neris. He carried the bat all the way, you know.
He did carry the
like
bat.
Like Pedro Serrano all the way across the bases in Major League. And then, you know, this, I think Joel Blank of the Killer Bees brought up a good point yesterday that I heard, where in his mind, there's like a line that goes straight down the from the pitcher's mound to the home plate. And if you're a pitcher, you can celebrate like that, as long as you're not going towards the other team's dugout.
Right.
If you celebrate towards your dugout, it's a little bit different. There's kind of a baseball and these unspoken rules and unwritten rules.
Oh,
no. Baseball, where it's like you can celebrate going one way, but you can't celebrate going the other way.
We should write these rules down. It's too
hard. We should put
to
a
remember.
Line in the middle of the field.
It would be really funny if every single player had like a handbook with the written rules, and like they had to take it out to determine whether or not they could actually do one thing or another.
Or there's just like a great like arbiter like floating above the state, like in a perch, like a tennis ref, like and flipping through like it looks like the Old Testament to find these unwritten rules.
Oh no, that's even worse. The Old Testament, bring that up. Let my unwritten rules go.
Let my relievers go.
He shot vapes on Paul Gallant. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Up next, we didn't do a very good job picking last week. Following up another week where we didn't do.
Unbelievable!
He is gone! Kiss McKinney goodbye!
But Paul Gallant is going to pick six games.
There's six!
Pick six!
Well, that's got pick six written all over it.
You need to watch.
This is exactly what we needed.
At 11:30, we're going to talk about our favorite sports politician, Dana Brown, throwing Dusty Baker completely under the bus today. I'm pretty shocked by what I just read online. 11:30. But we got to pick the six best football games of the weekend. Sean, how did we do last week? Not so good.
No, not good whatsoever. You know it's bad when a push like dramatically raises our
we needed a push.
Collective winning percentage for last week. Last week you went 1-4-1. I went 2-3-1.
I was on Vegas mode though.
Yes, you were on Vegas mode. Hashtag Vegas mode. So that brings your record for the season to 9-14-1. I am sitting pretty with a one game lead at 10-13-1. Now I will say this whole segment is us picking what games you need to watch.
Correct.
We're perfect record. Last week, we did such a great job on picking what games you should have watched. We
Correct.
Did not do a good job of
actually
picking
the,
games.
Right. So you can fade us if you want. Like, we actually technically are helping you out.
But these are the games you should be watching.
These are the games you should be watching, 100%. Pinchy says, hashtag fade Paul and Sean. We're not disagreeing.
No, do it. I this week, because we do a picks pool, like PC does a picks pool with the station, I literally just picked the opposite of what I pick on the show.
Oh, there you go.
I am
smart.
I am tied for first.
In a picks pool that I'm in, I guess I forgot to enter that. Patrick texted me and I was like, oh yeah. And then I forgot.
You did forget.
I forgot. Whoops. Sorry, Patrick.
A lot of people aren't in.
Picks pool I'm in where I pick games. Amazingly, I had the highest score in this like group of 400 people.
I
won $250 for it, and yet I was so bad picking, and of course I lost $1,000 in Colorado. Whatever. It's fine. It's fine. Let's bring it back. Let's bring it back. Okay. Saturday, 11 o'clock, SEC Network. The game that takes place in Jerry World. A game that is drunk often. The 3-1, 1-0 SEC, Texas A&M fighting Aggies. The 2-2, 0-1, Arkansas Razorbacks. The Aggies are favored by 6. Connor Wigman, their starting quarterback, out for the year. This is really a referendum on whether or not you believe in Max Johnson. I gotta say, I don't. I don't believe in Jimbo Fisher. I do believe in Bobby Petrino. Take the man out of his neck brace and let him be the head coach of the Texas A&M Fighting Aggies. I'm taking Arkansas to cover.
Wow. Wow. I am also going to take Arkansas, but for a different reason, the reason that you kind of mentioned at the start. This game is always drunk. This game rarely makes sense. It often goes to overtime. And so maybe there's a chance that the Aggies just win by 7 or whatever. I think more often than not, though, this game is within a touchdown.
It's fun. It really is.
It never makes sense.
Arkansas is low-key one of the craziest fan bases alive. And we do have some Arkansas fans that live in Houston because it's not that far away. This is a fun game. This is a good game to be at a bar for as well, I believe. But it's 11 o'clock. 2:30. Uh-oh. Sean.
What?
Ranked number 24, Kansas. 4-0. 1-0 in the Big 12. Heads to Austin to take on the 4-0 undefeated Texas Longhorns. They are number 3. They are 16.5 point favorites. 2021, remember, Kansas did beat Texas.
I do remember.
This is Steve Sarkisian saying how it actually helped the Horns.
In a weird way, I'm kind of glad it happened, right? Because it exposed some warts in our program that needed to get removed. And if we hadn't removed those warts, we might not be where we are today in our program. And so sometimes, you know, not all storms come to cause, you know, issues in your life. Some storms come to clear the path. And I felt like that storm cleared a path for us on what we needed to do in our program to move forward.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean... I'd prefer you just don't lose to Kansas and find those warts anyway, but whatever.
I would too. It's very embarrassing to lose to Kansas, but it would not be embarrassing to lose on Saturday to Kansas because Kansas has Jalen Daniels, who is one of my favorite players in college football. I think that Texas has shown that a dynamic quarterback can be very, very good against them. Obviously, Bryce Young showed that last year with not the best Alabama supporting cast. I think Texas wins, but I do think that Kansas is going to cover the 16.5 point spread.
16.5 is a lot for
Daniels is a good player, guys, you know?
Yeah. I think I honestly, if this was like 13.5, I think I would take the Longhorns. I think they do win by 2 scores. I just don't know if they win by 17. You know, I don't know if they win by 3 scores. Last year this was a blowout in favor of Texas. Texas just ran the ball all over Kansas, but that was with Bijan Robinson and Roschon Johnson. Jonathan Brooks has been pretty good for Texas thus far, but I'm not quite ready to put him on, like, he'll just run the ball all over this team mode. So, yeah, I'm also taking Kansas.
Okay, we're both on the same page on these two. Now we got to figure out which of these games we want to watch. Big noon kickoff. Again, guess what? Petrus, Colorado. Colorado, 21.5 home dogs to Caleb Williams and the undefeated number 8 USC Trojans. I don't know if people saw the story where Travis Hunter and Henry Blackburn went bowling together. You know, public showing. So
that's nice.
Blackburn stops getting death threats. So we can watch that game, which I don't think is going to be competitive, but it's Colorado. Do we do it for the ratings? Or 5 o'clock on ESPN. Number 13, LSU, 3-1, 2-0 in the SEC. On the road against number 20, Ole Miss, 3-1, 0-1 in the SEC. The Tigers.
Go Tigers.
2.5 point favorites.
I just want to do LSU Ole Miss.
Let's do that.
Once
game.
We get to three touchdowns, it's really like, I don't know, do the backups for USC stop playing?
Yeah,
like,
and this way we don't have to go back and forth between the drunk bowl between the Aggies and the Razorbacks.
Yeah,
and so Fox, which will likely be a done game a quarter in.
Yeah, so let's go to the Ole Miss hosting LSU.
Okay, I'm going to let you go first on this one because I'll be honest, I'm not really sure where I'm going here. Like, I think I'm thinking with my heart and not my brain.
I watched a lot of Ole Miss Alabama last week. Alabama, it's all right, good defense, but really posed very little threat on offense. Most drives, they really are boom or bust, and Ole Miss could not score with them. Ole Miss could not keep up with them. And LSU, if there's one thing they can do, it's throw the ball. Now, they can't cover anybody, but they can definitely throw the ball. Ole Miss is actually more of a running team than they are a passing team, so I'm not even sure if Jackson Dart will be able to victimize those LSU corners. The young LSU corner. So I'm going to take the Tigers to cover the 2.5.
Okay. I'm also going to take the Tigers to cover the 2.5, but it's mainly because I love LSU fans. I love them. They're delightful. I want to see some drunk LSU fans out and about on Saturday night.
I agree with that, but I also had football reasons.
Yeah, I don't. I don't.
Yeah, I respect that.
Yeah. Listen, this is why you could fade us, theoretically. Sunday, some NFL action. Let's start with the Steelers and the Texans. Steelers 3-point favorites at home. I want to pick the Texans so badly in this. I truly do. I think this will be a fairly competitive game, but I don't know how they overcome the offensive line issues. Stroud has looked great through 3 weeks. He truly has. If he looks great this week, if you're a doubter, I think you got to get on board. The big reservation I have with picking Pittsburgh is that I think Kenny Pickett sucks. I think he's a terrible quarterback. I think it was really funny this offseason to see Steelers fans like try to talk themselves into him. No, you spent a first-round pick on him, and you're probably going to be moving on from him in 3 years or so. Do I do it? Do I do it?
I don't know.
F it. Texans, let's go. I don't know what I did for my prediction with our little newsletter that we do every single week. I'm going to have to change it right now. Texans, baby. It's football time in Houston on a Battle Rant Sunday. Yeah, yeah. By the way,
Austin Deculus is going to be starting at tackle for the
Houston. That's not good. That's not good.
And TJ Watt's on the other team.
But guess what, Sean? JJ Watt is going to be there. And I saw the funniest Photoshop I think I've ever seen today. I believe the at Texans Mexico account tweeted a picture of JJ Watt with a Photoshop holding a Mexican flag.
Oh, that's actually awesome.
I love it. It's the greatest thing I've ever seen. And that has me feeling good.
Okay, give me the Steelers. Give me TJ Watt.
All right, do we pick the game between our teams? My 1-2 New England Patriots, your 2-1 Dallas Cowboys, the Cowboys 6.5-point favorites. Or do we pick the Jadeveon Clowney Deshaun Watson Bowl with the 2-1 Baltimore Ravens and the 2-1 Cleveland Browns? I say we pick the latter because the sound this week leading up to this game has been absolutely hysterical.
Okay, yeah. For that reason only, we'll refrain. You know what? We need to be able to work with each other on Monday. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
With our two teams going against each other. Yeah.
It's going to be really
hard.
So,
yeah, let's do Ravens-Browns.
Okay. Here's Roquan Smith, Baltimore Ravens linebacker, when asked about facing the Cleveland Browns. This is amazing.
You go in there as the enemy to go take over, and that's our plan, to actually go take over. I think they call it the dog pound. I consider myself a dog, so I'm right at home, and I can't wait. You're considered a bad guy because you're going into essentially another man's house, and you're trying to take over, like his wife, kids, everyone there to watch them. So you're going over to beat their tails in front of their wife and kids. So when you think about it from that perspective, like any man's going to, you know, fight to the death at that point. I know if that's me in that case, I know I would.
So that's Roquan Smith. He wants to go beat up a man in front of his wife and kids.
I like that.
All-time answer. He does have that dog in him, that's for sure. And then on the other side, you got Jim Schwartz, who's having a bit of a renaissance in Cleveland. That defense looks awesome. He had a very funny Dusty Baker-style colloquialism to discuss what to do against Lamar Jackson.
You know, if you sit there and shoo the chickens, as we say, you're not going to get him either. You know, so we're going to rely on our team speed. We're going to rely on team defense. We're going to rely on running through with leverage and, you know, try to take the fight to him as opposed to sitting back and, you know, trying to hem him in.
So, again, as I always do, I'm thinking with my heart here. Thinking with my head didn't work last week. Thinking with my heart. F Deshaun Watson. The Browns are 3-point favorites. Ravens going to win.
As much as if I were to just pick it off of the two,
vibes?
Literally the two sound clips that we just heard, I would 10 times out of 10 pick the Ravens. Roquan Smith is going there to beat up a family in front of their house, in front of their wife and kids. He's going to go into, can kick the door down and beat them up. On the other hand, you have someone who doesn't want to herd chickens. I don't know, but I'm not picking this game based off the clips. I'm picking this game off what I think is going to happen. Ravens too beat up. Give me the Browns.
Okay. Interesting that this is probably like the top match in the AFC North because of the way that the Bengals have started off the year and the uncertainty about Joe Burrow's health. This is the best game of the weekend. Noon. 3-0 Miami Dolphins at the 2-1 Buffalo Bills. The Bills are 2.5-point favorites. The Dolphins scored 70 points last week without Jaylen Waddle. Jaylen Waddle is back. These games last year were very entertaining. Miami won the first one. They did, I think, a very good job of frustrating Buffalo. Buffalo barely won the last one. It was a weird-ass blizzard that took place in the middle of the game, and Miami still was able to hang in there. Like, this is the game of the weekend. And they played in the playoffs, too. Right? Didn't they play in the playoffs?
Oh, yeah, with Skylar Thompson, though.
Right. But that game also was surprisingly competitive, considering it was Skylar Thompson.
That is true. I do like that both regular season matchups, it was in Miami in September, and Bills players were melting on the field. Mm-hmm. And then the second one was in Buffalo in, like, December, and we all know how that ended.
The Dolphins are the best team in the NFL right now. I'm taking the Dolphins.
Agreed.
There we go. That's our pick six, everybody. Those are the games you need to watch in order, once again. A&M in Arkansas at 11. Kansas and Texas at 2:30. 5 o'clock LSU and Ole Miss. Find a two television situation so that you can watch. Actually, shoot, three television situation. All the good games on Sunday are at noon. Steelers and Texans, Dolphins and Bills, Ravens and Browns. Up next, Dana Brown threw Dusty Baker under the bus this morning. We'll give you the comments that he said next. First, let me tell you about my friends at mybookie.ag. If there's a game among those games that we just discussed that I actually trust myself with, it's Kansas to cover against Texas. And it's entirely because I think Jalen Daniels is one of the most exciting players in college football. And that is a lot of respect to give Texas, even though Texas has had an awesome start this year. There is definitely a possibility that Texas is back. So you want to go to mybookie.ag and use promo code...
Noon Sports Talk host, Paul Gallant. He'll behave, Paul. Give him hell.
Politicians are master survivors. Politicians are great at pointing out when other people are not doing the job that they'd like them to do. Usually while ignoring their own track record. And I've said many times that Astros general manager Dana Brown is a politician. He is a promiser. He has yet to be a deliverer. He talked about extensions for Jose Altuve, for Alex Bregman, for Kyle Tucker. Have we seen any of those things? And I'm not going to blame him for Jeff Bagwell and Jim Crane, the things that they did in their office. No, not like that. I, of course, mean, you know, giving Rafael Montero a contract, let alone that one. Signing Jose Abreu with a bunch of metrics suggesting that he is not the same hitter he used to be. I like the Christian Javier deal. It's not looking great right now. And, of course, extending Michael Brantley, you're barely using him down the stretch. But Dana Brown, general manager of the Houston Astros, had this to say about the lineup entering this weekend's series against the Arizona Diamondbacks to wrap up the year. We'll have a high-powered offense. Our best hitters in there is what I'm hoping for. but Dusty makes the lineups. He makes the decision. I know we need the offense. We need game one. I mean, he put that on Dusty right there. And look, I don't think Dana Brown's in any danger of potentially losing his job. I know there's been some rumors that the Astros might bring somebody else into their front office. Who was that guy I'd never heard of before that ultimately ended up going with the New York Mets?
David Stearns.
Right. I don't know anything about him.
Former assistant GM to Jeff Luno.
Okay, that's neat. Again, who cares? Who knows what that person's going to be? It's weird that people like assume some person who has a great background is going to be a good general manager. Based off of what? It's a very difficult and thankless job, which is why some choose to act like politicians in there. I'm Team Dusty on this. Shut up, Dana. Shut up. You just got here. You want to see more offense? We all want to see more offense. We've wanted to see more offense all year from, I would say, Alex Bregman. I think it's been a disappointing year at the plate, relatively speaking. Jeremy Peña, same thing. Obviously, Jose Abreu. You got to play some guys that they're supposed to hit. Dusty can't hit the ball. Dusty can't throw the ball. Why do they need offense? Well, the starting pitching hasn't been up to snuff. And there's been some moments where the bullpen as well, where the bullpen has been shaky at best. It's easy to blame Dusty for all of that. And don't get me wrong, I've had some reservations about the lineups that Dusty Baker has been putting up from time to time too. But shut up, Dana. No one cares what you have to say. That is a pointed criticism of Dusty, and it makes me feel like this is going to be his last year no matter what. They win the World Series, done. They make it to the World Series, done. They are out at the end of this weekend. Definitely done. And you take a look at polls online. I saw some poll that was put up. Yes or no, would you fire Dusty Baker? It was 97% yes. I was stunned. That is a very high number. He will be the convenient scapegoat for this season. But I do think that to an extent, it is BS to blame the struggles of the players on the actual manager itself. The lineup only impacts so much. Man, I can't believe he said that, to be perfectly honest. I think it's a BS thing to do going into the weekend. I think it's a great moment for hindsight next week when he does this radio hit that he does weekly on 790. But I don't know what he was thinking here, truly.
Yeah, it's so weird that he, like, I
completely
get, like,
unnecessary, Sean.
I get, like, a certain point, like, some light, like, well, you know, we'll see if the bats, you know, see what the lineup has. You don't have to go, like, well, let's see if he puts the good ones in. Like, that
but that's what he did.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. It's crazy to do it at this point in the season, too, especially, like you mentioned, like, I get, like, at a certain point, Dana Brown, like, just by when he got hired, like, is somehow the least culpable of all the general managers, the least culpable for, like, the failings of the season because, like, well, all the big money guys that got signed before he got hired, and they're the really kind of what's been, the main issue with this team for stretches of the season, for large stretches of the season. And all the everyone else has been here for years. So Dana Brown hasn't really done anything, actually. He traded for Justin Verlander. It's like, that's his move, which might have also been a Jim Crane move. Like
It feels like it was a Jim Crane.
Yeah, so Dana Brown, like, sitting here and criticizing the lineup is, like, crazy, considering the different, like, you can have issues with Dusty's lineup. But, like,
Todd, the show comments, especially after the Astros just won. Great point. They just won. They took 2 or 3 in Seattle.
Scored, like, 8 or 9 last
game. I don't understand how this benefits anyone.
Yeah, no. That's,
other than it's angling yourself in a spot where, well, it's not my fault.
But no one would have thought it was his fault. That's the craziest part. It's like no reasonable person would have been like, you know what this Astros season's on? Dana Brown.
What if he said after that, he was like, and you know what? I can't control who puts the roster together. So, you know, Jeff Bagwell should have asked me before signing me about some of these contracts that he gave out.
I cannot both GM and manage. I can't do both. I just, you know, I show up to work, I do my thing, and decisions get made around me. I don't know. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Still cashing the checks, though. And then he winks at the camera, and And then, well, he winks at the camera. They're like, dude, this is a radio hit. Like, you don't have to wink.
Well, no, you have to wink. It's nice to talk with your hands and to be...
Not on radio.
Sean, shut up.
We're at least we're on Twitch, you know?
Yes, I mean, I know, but it's a better experience on Twitch, too. Most interactive sports talk show in Houston. Comment from poor Marine on the Twitch that made me laugh. Dana Brown is a racist. I don't see color, so that could be true. I honestly wouldn't know. But I would never put that on anybody, okay? We got to watch the accusations we're making. Homophobic, like with Hector Neris and Julio Rodriguez. Racism, like apparently Dana Brown is with Dusty Baker per poor Marine. Yeah. Waka Flocka Buck says that Dana's been low-key taking shots at Dusty all season long. There's been a couple of other moments. You are right on that front. I think specifically talking about the lack of playing time for Yiner Diaz.
But they've normally been, like, low-key. This yes. one's pretty out there, and it's the last three games of the season.
I don't control the lineups. That's essentially what he said. Dusty does. Another text. He did exactly what he needed to do. Everyone knows Dusty is the issue. Hell yes, he needed to put it on Dusty. We'd be in control a long time ago if it wasn't for Dusty. Sure.
Yeah, that's the thing of like, yeah, you can be right, but it doesn't make it like the right thing to do now.
Exactly. And I don't know that I buy that. The starting pitching has not been good this year. I like you're asking the offense to do a lot every night, and this offense is not scoring 8 runs every night. They're scoring a lot of runs on some nights, but they're not doing it every night. No lineup does it every single night. Hell, even the Texas Rangers, it's not quite that.
Yeah, the team ERA for the Astros this year is, I think, up like over a run.
It's terrible.
So like that, or it might even be like a run and a half. So like very simply, like 10,000 point of view, like that's kind of the issue.
100%.
For as much as we hand ring over the lineups, it's like actually the pitchers just need to pitch better.
Pitchers need to pitch better. That's what it's been the whole effing year, but it's the lineup. I don't agree with that. From the 409, hey, the players themselves are unhappy with Dusty for the way he's treated Chaz and Diaz. Players want him gone, tired of the BS. I don't know if I can honestly say that. I don't know. I think you're possibly right, but I don't think we've seen a lot of details about how the Astros don't like Dusty anymore. It could be true, but I've yet to see something where players are sick of it. Now, when the year is done, I'm sure we will see it, but not right now. Bear Brother 123 comments, Dana is simply foreshadowing Dusty's firing. I mean, allowing Dusty to retire.
That is what's going to happen, too. Like, Dusty, I can guarantee you that Dusty Baker will not be fired this year. He's going to retire or be back next year. Like, you will not get the ESPN notification. Maybe if they completely miss the playoffs, you might get the ESPN notification. Houston Astros, fire Dusty Baker. No, he's going to be allowed to retire.
I wonder if he resists.
Being allowed to retire?
I wonder if he's like, nah,
then it'll be mutual parting of ways.
Maybe he still wants to coach. Maybe he'll be a bench manager somewhere next year. SquidChef 007, good excuse, but if you think Dusty's hunches costed them 4 to 7 games, Dusty is to blame too. I don't think it's 4 to 7. I think maybe 1 or 2. And I bet like along the same lines that a couple of his lineup decisions actually helped the Astros out, which is why I think it's 1 to 2. I don't think it's as egregious as some believe it to be. Sometimes these decisions have worked out, as we saw in this Astros-Mariners series.
Yeah.
Sometimes playing Martin Maldonado works, weirdly. Anyway, time for a little garbage time before we hit the road. I'm only
happy when it's garbage. And then I start eating garbage.
If there's one guy up here who knows about total garbage,
garbage,
it's this guy. It's garbage time with Paul Gallant. Let's go.
Let's go.
Okay. You know what we do. We are whores for ratings at the Paul Gallant Show. Why we've been doing well in the ratings. So we talk about the things that people want to talk about. Hector Neris versus Julio Rodriguez. And of course, Taylor Swift. Did you know, guys? Searches for Travis Kelce increased by 1,300% on Spotify compared to the Monday before. It's the number 2 overall podcast in the United States and Canada, the podcast where he addressed the Taylor Swift situation.
For a second, I was like, why are they searching for him on Spotify? I forgot that he has a podcast. B, that the podcasts are on Spotify. I was like, wait, does he have like an album that I don't remember?
It would be funny if all of a sudden he had an album.
He definitely has unreleased music. I'm willing to bet that Travis Kelce has rapped.
I bet. I have another question, but I'm not sure I should ask it on the air.
Don't do it then.
Okay. So while we're continuing to just roll with Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce, the biggest story in the sports world, get ready for that on Sunday Night Football when the Chiefs are up 28-0 on the Jets in the first quarter. I saw one of the greatest articles I've ever seen. It's just a hit piece on Taylor Swift, and the guy who wrote it is standing tall in the pocket. He's basically telling everybody to go piss off. It's an article in a piece of literature, a website called by Mark Hemingway. The title, Taylor Swift's Popularity is a Sign of Societal Decline. This is before all the Travis Kelce stuff. This is from September 5th of 2023. And it is amazing. I love it. I like a good take, and I like a guy who stands up for what he believes in. Wrote Hemingway, it's not just that Swift has conquered the unwashed masses. America's elite tastemakers have also become unrepentant Swifties. This summer, the New York Times covered Swift with an enthusiastic zeal not reserved for any other figure since maybe Obama, even going so far as to publish a distasteful meditation on internet randos' lesbian fantasies about her. My actual gripe, the specifics of why and how her music sucks. It's utterly defined by self-obsession rather than introspection. Where other artists will occasionally do a Christmas album, it seems like every Taylor Swift album is a Festivus record devoted to the airing of grievances and feats of artistic strength. She has almost wholly pioneered a new genre of what an acquaintance of mine calls the bellyaching about a boyfriend song. It's true that young men are frequently terrible to young women, and there's nothing inherently wrong with this being fodder for pop songs. But there are limits. It's, as the kids say, pretty cringe to still be exploiting these past relationships, which, considering Swift's had a charmed life since she was a teenager, seem like pretty hollow examples of genuine heartbreak. Damn! At some point, we have to recognize that even if you embrace the limits of pop music, the distance between middlebrow entertainment and the lowest common denominator is enormous. Our need for shared artistic connection cannot be allowed to overwhelm a duty to also collectively seek out music that takes us places and challenges us with insight into the human condition. Revelations about ourselves we didn't know, or maybe didn't want to know, and otherwise produces insights into the problems of others. And I, for one, already know enough to know Taylor Swift just doesn't have it in her to do that. I mean, bravo. Well written.
Yeah.
Very highbrow. And I agree with everything he said
there. I was going to say, the entire time I'm nodding along, but he's using, but you know, is it a he that wrote this?
It is a he. Mark Hemingway.
Hemingway, like, wrote this, and not Ernest, right? He wrote this in a way where I'm like, oh, yeah, yeah. I haven't thought of it like that. I agree, but I haven't thought of it like that. Good job.
He's on Twitter at the Heminator, and I'm giving him a follow right now.
The Heminator?
Senior writer at Real Clear Investigations. That doesn't sound as cool as the Federalist.
Or the Heminator. It's like him and Will Anderson.
His cover photo on Twitter is a sign with some sort of Asian characters, and underneath it says, please urinate with precision and elegance. That's like that My 24-Hour Fitness. Like, please do not defecate on the floors. That sign. Which is all over the bathrooms. Anyway, guys, I hope this hasn't been a defecation on your floors. This has just been the Paul Gallant Show. Subscribe to the podcast. Check it out. DJ Bienname and I talked about the Texans and Steelers Hour 1. You can hear all the other craziness sometimes on YouTube as well. Big thanks to Sean Mapes behind the glass and to DJ. I am merely Paul Gallant. So long. Farewell. Have yourselves a wonderful weekend. Josh Beard and The Who. The final show is up next. Peace.